Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Pastor Eli James here with another installment of Christogenos with my co-host, William Fink. How are you this evening, Bill?
Fine. Praise Yahweh.
Praise Yahweh. Now, before I get into, I think last time we covered pretty much up to the end of chapter 3. Excuse me. And we had pretty much discussed, I think, and revealed at least a dozen or so references to sexuality and particularly race mixing. And that's what was going on here in chapter 3. And it seems like everybody in the world, and even some within Christian identity, people who call themselves Christian identists or British Israel, and certainly British Israel, do not want to discuss race mixing. It's like it's not part of the discussion. It's uncouth to even discuss the subject. Yet it's pretty obvious to me that that's what Genesis chapter 3 is all about. Do you want to give us your opinion on this real quick before we get into today's show?
Well, the Bible discusses race mixing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
The error of Balaam.
Okay.
Is race mixing. The
yeah.
way of Cain is race mixing. The Jezebel is a fornicator. She's a race mixer.
Yes.
Esau is a fornicator. He's a race mixer.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these things are equated by Jude and also mentioned in Revelation and many other books of the Bible.
Yes, yeah.
And race mixing is a fact of life, and the fact that it's scorned by Yahweh is a fact of the Bible.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so we're living in a world today in which, quote-unquote, racism is like the from the pulpits and from the radio and television stations and from the psychologists to the, what do you call it, the so-called scientists who promote evolution. Racism is like the greatest evil in the world. And yet
racism is the greatest love.
That's right.
I have an article I wrote on my blog. Racism is love. It's love for your brother, and it's love for Yahweh's original creation.
Right.
Misogyny
right.
is hate. Race
yes.
mixing is hate.
Yeah.
It's the destruction of the original creation.
Yeah.
It's the destruction of both races. Really, if you want to count the various tribes or whatever I got to say to them, whatever I have to call them, of non-Adamic people, races.
Right.
And if you want to assume that they were original, well, then to mix us with them is the destruction of both races.
Right, right. And when we have to ask the question, well, why did Yahweh create us in the first place if ultimately we're to be destroyed by miscegenation? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, because the whole world is operating on Jewish lies.
Right.
And that is why there is so many conflicts in the things that they try to purport.
Yes, yeah. And they have used their money, power, influence to brand racism, even though the Jews are, in fact, the worst racists on the planet, at least in terms of their culture. You know, of course, they don't qualify as a bona fide race, but their supremacism and their cultural isolationism is certainly evident wherever they go. You know, for example, it boggles my mind that people actually, people in the black community, because Jews have been so prominent in supporting the civil rights movement, okay? Yet, not a single Jew that I'm aware of has moved into a black neighborhood. And blacks are never invited to live in Jewish neighborhoods, you know? So if there's support, they certainly don't show it in their daily lives. So here we have just more hypocrisy from the Jews and, you know, the people, it's people believing their words and never following their actions. And Jesus told us, you know, by their fruits shall we know them. And so we can see it's really obvious that what they're doing is they're using the other races to destroy the white race.
That's the plan all along.
Yeah, and that's what Genesis 3:15 is telling us.
That's the yes. plan of, that's what Balaam counseled Balak to do. They've been doing it ever since.
That's right. That's right. And the whole Bible counsels us true Israelites to stay separated from the other races, because if we don't, we cannot fulfill our commission, which is to restore government, God's government, back on this planet, which, of course, Satan, Azazel, Lucifer, whatever name you want to call him, instituted this false government long ago on this planet and has succeeded in reinstituting it again.
Well, we're going to find out why that is, I believe.
Okay. All right. All right. So with that brief intro, ladies and gentlemen, let's go. I want to back up quickly because I definitely want to discuss Eve's state of mind and what actually happened to Eve. And, you know, obviously we're talking, in our case, Bill and I and all two seedliners insist that what happened was a sexual seduction. But what I want to talk about tonight is whether or not Eve was tempted or whether she was deceived. Now, there's a big difference between these two things. You cannot equate these. And the Bible in Genesis 3:15 and also in Genesis 2, it says nothing about Eve being tempted. It says she was, she says, when we get into Genesis 4:1, that she was beguiled. All right, and that's the use of her terminology, that she was beguiled, and which means it means seduced, captivated, tricked, deceived, okay? But we want to talk about whether or not Eve had in her mind some sort of evil thought, and that's what the non-seedliners insist, that Eve is guilty within her own mind of having been part of this situation because she was tempted. In other words, she committed an evil act. Now, this is not the case. I want to say this is not the case, that Eve did not commit an evil act. She did not do something which was punishable by any law because she was totally innocent. Okay, now this may sound odd for people at first, but I want to compare, first of all, when I was watching a documentary, it was actually a documentary movie, of Ted Bundy, the serial killer, the way he went about, setting up women, and his targets were almost always women. In one case, for example, Ted Bundy pretended to have a flat tire. He did. I guess he made the tire go flat, and then he put his arm in a sling. And so pretending that he had a broken arm, he enticed this woman to help him fix his flat tire, okay? So she agreed and helped him to fix the flat tire, and while she was down on the ground fixing his flat tire, he took the tire iron and smashed her head in, okay? Now, this woman... Let me ask you, Bill, this woman who assisted Ted Bundy, was she in any way tempted to do anything wrong, or was she simply tricked into helping him?
No, absolutely not. There's certainly a difference between the two ideas,
tempted
and deceived. The woman was deceived into thinking she was helping somebody who needed help.
That's right. So we have to understand that when we're talking about deception, it is not always the same as temptation, and usually it isn't, because when you're talking about dealing with con artists, these con artists are usually trying to set you up and leading you into a situation, not necessarily where they're asking you to commit an evil act. You know, the temptation is something where you know you're getting ready to do something wrong. You know, for example, let's say you're a drug user, okay, and you've been off the stuff for several years, and then you go to a party and someone says, "Oh, I've got some cocaine. You want to do some cocaine?" Now that's temptation because you've been a drug user in the past, and this person is asking you to do it again, even though you know you shouldn't. Okay, this is not the case with Eve. Eve did not have an evil thought. Eve was not being tempted to do something wrong. Eve simply did not know any better. She was in a situation where she had never been deceived by anyone before, okay? Even though she did disobey Yahweh's command, not to partake of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, okay? But she was still tricked, and she had no idea of what she was doing, and she this was her first experience with someone other than Yahweh trying to tell her to do something or not to do something, okay? So I insist that she was not tempted, but she was deceived, and this happens constantly in our daily lives, and this is why deception is such a tremendously evil thing.
One more thing.
Yeah.
Hi, Eli.
Oh, hi. Hi, Pastor Dvari. Yes.
I couldn't come in. I was here 15 minutes ago, and I couldn't get through.
Okay, well, you just appeared on my screen maybe a minute or two ago, and so I clicked on your name here, and
mm-hmm.
so you're with us, okay?
Yeah, well, can I add a two-cents word?
Surely, please.
In my opinion, Eve was absolutely innocent in this case.
Okay.
I heard you say that.
Yes.
But why? Because it's a very unfair competition going on here. It's between
yes.
Satan and Eve.
Right.
And here's the thing. Eve was so gullible because they had no experience with evil before.
Right.
And so when you have this horrible thing come up to you and trying to persuade you that you're going to be like gods.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she innocently, she says, since she didn't know any better,
yes,
because had no experience, and she was honest and sincere, she fell for it. So
right.
We can't blame that
right.
on her.
Yeah, and that's why I brought up the case of Ted Bundy. That was his modus operandi. And in every single case, he never asked, he wasn't inviting these women to do something wrong, okay? These women that he manipulated, deceived, and murdered, they were actually doing him a favor. They thought they were doing something good, okay?
Yeah.
So, and the reason why I bring this up is because the anti-seedliners insist that Eve was tempted, that Eve had an evil thought in her mind, and therefore, she is to blame.
No, she was tempted, all right, but she wasn't evil because she was gullible. I mean, this
right.
is the first woman
right.
in the whole universe in the seed
yeah.
line of Yahweh.
Right.
And she just didn't know which one. It sounded good. I'll try it.
Right, right, yeah. But she didn't. She was not tempted in the sense that she knew it was wrong, and therefore somebody was asking her to do something wrong, and she agreed to do something wrong. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah, well, one really bothers me the most is the single seed liners should know better. They have so much knowledge already about Eve and our
right.
identity itself and so on. And then they come up with this idiotic issue that, no, there's no two seed line.
Right,
there's
right.
a million proof for it. That there is two seed line. Otherwise, there is no competition.
Right. I have a quote here from Stephen Jones. But Bill, do you have any comment at this point before I get into this quote?
Well, give the Stephen Jones quote, and then I'd like to give a short discourse on a topic from Paul of Tarsus.
Okay, great, very good. Okay, now here, in a nutshell, what the anti seed liners are saying is that since Eve had an evil thought, and this is what they say. They say that Eve had an evil thought. Then there must have been evil or temptability or some kind of defect in Eve herself, which is evil. Okay, so they impute evil to Eve. This is what the non-seedliners say. Okay, here is a statement by Stephen Jones which confirms this. And he is an advocate of universal reconciliation, which means that all of us, sinners and non-sinners, and no matter what race we are going to be reconciled back to Yahweh at the judgment day or whenever, okay?
Well, that's because he has to cover for his Negro daughter.
Oh
yeah, there
okay.
you go.
All right, quite possibly, yes. But here's this quote. And this, folks, to me, a lot of what he says here is quite unbelievable, but here we go. Universal reconciliation is God's final solution to the tension in creation brought about by the temporary injustices which he himself instituted. This is Stephen Jones saying that God instituted temporary injustices.
God.
Well, he's got to read the Book of Revelation, and it shows how Yahweh is going to cure temporary injustices because he's going to throw all the clowns like Stephen Jones into the lake of fire.
Right.
I love it.
Because, you know, he's blaming Yahweh for the situation. Now, isn't it true? Now, let's go back to Revelation 12.
Well, let's look at the story of Job real quick.
Okay.
Look at all the evil that befell Job, and Job was considered righteous. Why? Because he never spoke a word against Yahweh.
There you go.
He never blamed God.
Yeah. And in fact,
Stephen Jones is no Job.
Right. And this is, in fact, what the Jews do. The Jews have this attitude that they know better than God.
That's the point of rebellion. That's
yes.
The whole idea behind the rebellion, the rebels, the word bitter
is
rebel.
And because apparently he's also a no Satan advocate because he doesn't want to bring Satan into the equation. Therefore, God, Yahweh, must be the culprit himself.
Well, that's the Chinese taught them that in that book, The Art of War, where the best way to defeat an adversary is to convince them that they have no enemy.
Right, exactly.
And that's what Stephen Jones and the rest of those clowns, Dave Barley, that's what they're trying to do.
Yes.
And I'm convinced they work for the Jews. I can't believe that anybody could come up with the crap they come up with in the name of
mm-hmm.
Israel identity. And from a scholarly point of view, I cannot conceive how they could read and study the Bible
mm-hmm.
and come up with the point of view that they have.
Yeah, because the Bible clearly teaches that there was a rebellion against Yahweh, and that evil is a direct result of this rebellion. It's not caused by Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
go ahead, Pastor Udvari.
Yeah. You have to understand one thing, and I'm sure you do, but most people who may be tuned in and not understanding 100% what we are trying to say here is the fact itself that the biblical subject of a two-seed line doctrine is the most controversial one in the world.
That's right.
And because of this, there is so much opposition against it because their life hanging in balance.
That's right.
See, those people who got away so far with the sinful life, in other words, and race mixing and everything else in the world, they got away because the churches quit or refused to teach the seed line doctrine,
right.
The two seed line. And unfortunately, the ones like Pete Peters and others who are single seed line believers, that they convinced this Jones guy better than we did.
Okay. Well, yeah. We have to change that, don't we?
Yeah. And
yes.
Anyway, the liberals and organized churches spend millions of dollars an effort to explain away Yahweh's true intention
mm-hmm.
by his creation of different races.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And, pardon me?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, and there are two methods they use most often. The first one is that they spiritualize away Genesis 3:15.
Right, for sure.
And that's a big one because people sitting in a pew say, gee, that sounds good and true.
Mm-hmm.
But the next one is neither of these accomplish the third method. But the one is involved here is avoiding
mm-hmm.
the subject. In
sure.
other words, refuse to talk about it, and especially the Catholics say, this is something God don't want you to know.
Right.
Now, that's a lie,
yes.
And the Catholic Church has no problem lying.
Oh, of course not.
So, and
yes.
I the book I'm writing right now is one of the chapters in it is Catholics are Catholics Christian.
Uh-huh.
And I have about 20 subjects brought into it, and all of them tell you about heathen customs and everything and why the Catholic Church is where they are today.
Right, certainly. Certainly.
So,
yes.
But anybody who comes up with this wonderful truth doctrine, in fact, the first time in the world's history this has come to a light, and this is why it hits so hard.
Mm-hmm.
People are unexperienced, never heard of this two-seed line thing, and therefore they opposing it.
Right, right.
And then what they do is label us. You know, they put labels
well,
all
yeah,
over
we're
me. My back
and
is full of labels.
Sure, sure.
And and they say that we are racist and hate monger and bigots and all that stuff. Boy, I'm proud of those labels.
Well,
that's
why my favorite verse of the Bible is probably Luke 6:22. Blessed are you when men hate you and cast your name out as evil.
Exactly.
The
there
yes.
you go.
Yeah, and yeah. And before the world hated you, it hated me.
It hated me, yeah.
Okay. Well, let me continue with this quote here. Well, actually, first let me make another quick point. One of the reasons why they take this position, because there's a few verses in Scripture that the Scripture seem to say that Yahweh did evil to the Israelites, okay?
But where does that come from?
Well, it's only from their point of view. You know, when the Israelites disobeyed Yahweh and he punished them, they referred to that as evil.
There's three things Yahweh cannot do. One is to be evil.
Right.
Number two, he can't change history.
Okay.
And I'm trying to remember the third one.
Well,
he can't lie.
Yeah, he can't lie.
Oh, yeah. He cannot lie.
Yes.
So these three things are so important that people will understand.
Yeah. Yeah. If Yahweh could lie, then this whole universe is in trouble.
Big trouble.
Okay. So, but yet these anti-seedliners have taken this position that Yahweh does evil, okay? And this is one case in which he did it. He set up Eve for a fall. He set up Adam and Eve for a fall. Okay, let me continue here. The divine law defines the judicial question by insisting that God take responsibility for all injustices that he does or allows to be done.
So this is the parents suffer for the sins of the children now.
Yes. Here is Stephen Jones saying that God does injustices.
Well, it's a shame that anybody considers Stephen Jones a Christian identity pastor in the first place.
Yeah, right. Okay. One more sentence, because this concerns universal reconciliation. The biblical account leaves us no alternative but to justify God by universal reconciliation. Can you believe this?
Well, that's a term that I never read in the Bible.
Right.
I think Jones got it from maybe Sigmund Freud or
something. Right. Yeah, and universal reconciliation is absolutely not taught in the Holy Scriptures. There's simply no doubt about this. And here, what Stephen Jones is arguing is that, number one, Yahweh committed an evil act by allowing, you know, Adam and Eve to be deceived, okay? And then we have to make up for his mistake.
Jeez.
By universally reconciling everybody back to Yahweh.
You
know,
can
you believe this?
Did it miss Matthew 25, where the sheep are nations,
uh-huh,
and they go to eternal preservation, and the goats are nations, and they go into the lake of fire?
Oh, right. Yeah.
There's so much scripture that refutes Stephen Jones. It's incredible.
Yeah.
And his lie is so blatant that I'm sure that it's the big lie theory of the Jews that Adolf Hitler identified in Mein Kampf.
Right. We have
big
to wonder
lie.
Who he's trying
so
to please.
Big that everybody believes it. That's what he's doing here.
Well, here, let me quote Matthew 25:46 here. And these shall go away into everlasting punishment, referring to the evil ones, but the righteous into life eternal. Now, this this word everlasting or eternal, in both cases, it's the same Greek word, aeonios, okay? Is this not saying that the evildoers will be punished? You know, I mean, their punishment will be everlasting. I mean, they're not going to be reconciled. If the word everlasting means anything, it means they're going away for good. So you're the Greek expert, Bill.
The word aeon is an age or an era, and it's usually considered a very long length of time in the Greek mind.
Okay.
And when it's used in the plural, most scholars agree that it means forever.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, I've never seen that disputed, actually.
Right.
It,
okay.
when the word aeon is used in the plural, it means eternal. It means forever.
Okay. So if they're going to into eternal punishment, how can they be reconciled, as Stephen Jones insists?
Right. There is no reconciliation.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the molecules that make their bodies are reconciled back with the cosmic muck.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly.
That's about it.
Yeah, Pastor Advari, have you ever heard this doctrine before, that the evildoers will be forgiven and reconciled back to Yahweh?
Yeah, every church teaching that.
Not just to Stephen Jones.
There's many Stephen Jones, even with more knowledge than the general public.
Right.
And we should really use a delete button there for
really, yeah, because, well, for example, Psalms 145:20, Yahweh preserveth all them that love him, but all the wicked will he destroy.
Yeah. You know, they teach so many false doctrines that it's pathetic. And all of them are basically because they're trying to cover up their own foolishness.
Yes.
And lack of knowledge. How many people really went into a 6,000-year-old doctrine, such as the creation of, I mean, not creation, but bringing in Adam's race into the world,
mm-hmm.
when Yahweh bred into his nostril the spirit of life.
Right.
These people have never been taught these things. They never been taught how the third chapter of Genesis should be actually starting with the first verse on to the rest of it, in details to be taught in every school, I mean, these study groups. You
right,
know?
Yeah.
They're afraid to tackle with it. They don't want to be called, labeled names,
right.
You know, and all kinds of things. So
right.
They just bypass and go to the next one.
Yeah, so the problem is that
this isn't the mainstream pastor that we're talking. This is a man who has a following, who claims to be Christian identity.
Right.
Well,
these are the wicked things that he's teaching in the name of Christian identity.
Right.
He's worse than the rest of them.
Yeah,
he was just a Baptist or a Pentecostal, I wouldn't even want to talk about him here.
Right,
I mean,
And he has done some great work in other areas, but when it comes to, and here is the illogical and irrational lengths to which people will go to in order to try to argue against two seed line, because they simply will not accept the facts as they're presented in the Bible that there is a non-white race that is evil and rotten to the core, namely the Jews, okay, who have done nothing since Genesis 3:15 but try to overthrow us, kill us, murder us, take our governments away, and distort our holy scriptures, and hire people like Stephen Jones and John Hagee to disrupt and distort the holy scriptures so that our people are deceived just like Eve was deceived.
Well, Paul says in 2 Corinthians 11:14, I'd like to get into that, and no wonder, for the adversary himself transforms himself into a messenger of light. And that goes on all over the world today.
Right.
The earlier in that same chapter in 2 Corinthians 11, Paul says, "For I and I quoted this last week in demonstrating that Genesis chapter 3 was all about sex.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to quote it now from a different viewpoint because we're making a different topic. It's a different discussion of the same events.
Right.
For I admire you with zeal of Yahweh, for I have joined you to one husband to present a chaste virgin to Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where Paul correlates the Genesis 3 event with a sexual happening and virginity.
Right.
But I fear lest in any way, as the serpent had thoroughly beguiled Eve in his villainy,
mm-hmm.
your thoughts would be corrupted from that sincerity and purity which is with the anointed.
Yeah.
And what Paul is saying here is that it's the serpent who is the villain,
mm-hmm.
and it's Eve who was beguiled or deceived or seduced.
Right.
And the word can be translated in any one of those three methods, and who was sincere and pure
right.
before she was beguiled.
Right. No.
And that's what Paul's saying here. He's saying a lot in this one verse.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
And we see that clearly Eve is innocent, the serpent is the villain.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
Stephen Jones and the rest of those clowns, they don't want to admit that the serpent even exists.
That's right.
That's right.
Anything but a snake in the grass.
Yes.
And that's not what the serpent is, because the serpent is defined all over the New Testament as the devil, as Satan,
yes,
as the adversary, as a walking, talking,
yes,
human form.
Right. Yeah.
And
both spiritually and human. Yes.
Time, John the Baptist admits that there are many of them roaming around Judea.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well,
yes.
You all know that the big name in identity for many years, I listened to him until I find out that he's double talking, Sheldon Emery. He didn't even believe that Satan is real.
Okay.
And how can, and the following that man had, this makes me sick.
Dave Harley is the heir to his,
his heir, yes.
Yeah,
so much
damage he's doing.
I wrote Stephen Jones from my period of seclusion and my, you know, as I was developing my own knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote Stephen Jones and he ignored my letters.
Right.
I wrote Dave Farley and he ignored my letters.
Yeah.
I wrote him longer letters and he ignored them.
Yes.
And that's when Clifton Emmerheiser started publishing my letters.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Very good.
To Stephen Jones and Dave Farley. And if these men, I mean, I wasn't uncivil or rash or arrogant or obstinate in any of my correspondences with them. I wrote them as a prisoner with an honest inquiry.
Yes.
And what sort of ministry do these clowns think that they're operating if they can't,
mm-hmm,
if they can't reply to an honest and sincere letter?
That's right.
From somebody in the position that I was in.
Right.
It's a common courtesy.
Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely. I sat and wrote Dave Farley a 24-page letter, I think it was.
Right.
Jeez.
Right. And this is how much they fear the two seed line message that they cannot even respond to it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And
I have scholarship. They're just talking out of both sides of their mouths.
That's right. Excuse me. Well, because I've had the same experience with Stephen Jones myself. I used to, he has a website, and his phone number's on the website, his address is on the website, his email. I have phoned him, I have emailed, I have mailed him, and he has never responded.
That's indecent.
Yeah, he's given me the same treatment that he's given you, because why? Because he cannot debate with a two-seed liner and win the argument.
No. Yes,
they know that. But I want to get back to this idea that Eve had an evil thought, which to me is absolute blasphemy. But go ahead, you had something to say there.
Well, that's where I was going with this.
Okay.
And in 2 Corinthians 11, we clearly see that it's the serpent who is the villain.
Yes.
And Eve who was deceived, seduced, beguiled from her
yeah,
sincerity and her purity.
Right, right.
Now, in James 1, Chapter 1, and I cited this last week too, but I didn't actually quote it. I didn't have the quote available.
Okay.
James, he sort of explains the progression of sin. And he says, for Yahweh is not to be tempted,
mm-hmm,
by evil.
Right.
He tries no one, but each is tried. Each of us is tried by his own desires being drawn out and enticed.
Yes.
Then the desire conceiving gives birth to error, which,
mm-hmm,
is sin. And this error or the sin being accomplished. In
yeah,
other words, an act being performed brings forth death. That there's no thought crime in the Bible.
Right.
You have to commit an act.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only thought crimes in the Talmud and
yeah,
in the ADL.
And there has to be a victim.
Right.
There has to be a victim.
And,
yeah,
and there's no victim unless there is an actual act that's performed.
Yes.
Now, in 1 Timothy 2:14, Paul says, and the King James translation of this verse, and most other versions are very weak, and my reading of the verse depends on who do you want to consider or what you want to consider the subject of the verb.
Yeah.
And that's arguable. It could go either way in Greek. And the King James translates 1 Timothy 2:14, and Adam was not deceived, but the woman being deceived was in the transgression.
Yes.
I can't translate that verse like that because it's clear that Adam ate too.
Yes.
Adam was also in the transgression.
Right. But he was not deceived. He understood that what Eve had done was a mistake.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Adam made a conscious decision to join her after she was deceived.
Right.
That's clear that that's what happened. What
mm-hmm.
happened, and that's what Paul says.
Yes.
And my translation of 1 Timothy 2:14 is, and Adam was not deceived, but the woman had been thoroughly beguiled or deceived or seduced when the transgression occurred.
Yes.
And I can defend the Greek to that, and my rendering of the Greek is much more in context
yes.
with the events that happened in Genesis 3 than the mainstream renderings of the Greek.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
Paul's clearly saying that a transgression occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a thought crime.
Yes, yes.
It's an act, something actually happened. I mean, we've proven
what
happened, but the non-seedliners actually want to deny that anything happened and that it was a thought crime, but the
yes.
thought of that is ridiculous.
Exactly.
They're thinking that is
exactly.
a crime. That's the thought crime.
Yes. But here, now I think we're all in agreement about that. That Eve did not commit a thought crime, and that Eve was actually innocent, was not tempted, and she was not a person who was being led to do something which she knew was wrong, you know, like a drug addict being tempted into, you know, taking another hit or something like that, you know. It's not like she consciously was aware that she was doing something wrong, and that's why I brought up the Ted Bundy scenario. Because the women that he enticed and deceived, they were thinking they were actually doing something good. And this is why deception is such a great evil. Deception, and people who engage in deception are actually engaging in the devil's work. We have to understand this is what's going on. Now, if Eve had an evil thought, then when Yahweh breathed the breath of life into Adam and Eve, that means he must have breathed evil into them as well. Otherwise, Eve could not have had this evil thought. Okay? This is what the anti-seedliners are suggesting, that when Yahweh breathed the breath of life into them, he also breathed evil into them. Therefore, they accuse Yahweh of this evil, not just Eve. And this, to me, is blasphemy.
It's absolutely blasphemous. But
yes.
What do you want from a guy that has a black daughter and says that she came from God?
Yeah, right, right. So, so Pastor Advari, can you believe this?
Yeah, I do. but you know what? I don't know. As I understand, this is about the fifth session on the this topic.
Yes.
And I was not available to, you know, listen to those previous programs. So I really don't know how far you guys got explaining certain things in Genesis 3.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it, I actually, instead of accusing Eve to being having an evil thought,
mm-hmm.
it actually should be guided back to Genesis 3, verse 3.
Okay.
And 4 and 5.
Yes, okay.
And maybe a few more down to 6. Okay, that's because the Satan gets in here
mm-hmm.
and sweet talks Eve, right?
Sure, yes.
And when she hear all this good stuff that you're going to be like gods and all those goodies,
right?
You're going to be fantastically smart and everything.
Mm-hmm.
She fell for it, and that's, like I said before,
right.
had no experience and gullibly believed it. But a lot of people don't understand how the whole sin was, you know, the things before it happened. And it's verse 6 is so important to take apart and show that the woman saw the tree was good for food. Now, this is all symbolic language.
Surely.
And, of course, but Eve didn't eat an apple.
No,
the
sorry.
Word apple doesn't even appear in the book of Genesis.
Right. Well, yeah, and this is the point I'm getting at, Pastor Advari, that neither does the word temptation.
Yeah.
Okay? It's deception. It's not temptation.
Yeah, and...
Yes. Okay.
My buzzer goes off. Anyway, here it is what I want to make a point of. Verse 6 is the one that will somewhat, even for a beginning, can be explained that it's a physical act.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a imagination or something. It's actually a sexual sin.
Yes.
And why? Because it says the tree was good for food and a tree to be desired.
Mm-hmm.
Now listen to these words.
Yes.
And it was pleasant to the eyes.
Right.
And desired. So there is all words here which could be used in a intimate subject here.
Right. And I think, let me just quickly interrupt you here because Bill and I took this apart to some extent last time. Certainly there is no such thing as a tree which can increase your wisdom and knowledge.
Yeah.
Not a literal tree.
But I tell you what, when the verse 7 says that they knew that they were naked.
Right.
That's not a,
that's not a mental, that has nothing to do with mental sins, right?
Well, I tell you what, Eve puts a, what do you call a
big leaf?
No, what I'm trying to say that she puts fig leaves, okay?
Right. Yes.
Now, the fig leaves are usually pictured as a thing that will cover up a sex organ on the
sure,
front.
Yes.
Modesty. Okay. But if this would have been a just another act or something,
mm-hmm.
then instead of giving fig leaves, they would have given an apron.
Right. Well, yeah, that's some translations use the word apron.
Yeah, it does here too.
Yeah, it still covers up the same area of the body.
Yeah.
Okay. It doesn't cover up your elbow or your knee or your foot.
Yeah.
It covers up your genital organs. That's what it covers up.
Yeah. And
yes.
Verse 3 is talking about touching.
Yes.
And touching to eat. Eat was also a sexual act in Genesis 20. Let's see.
Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah, we talked about
that.
Yeah, go ahead,
Bill. Go back and listen to the show last week. I'm sure you'll be more than satisfied that we covered maybe even more than you expected to hear about this chapter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But getting back, you know, because I think we've pretty much completed most of Genesis chapter 3.
Yeah, excuse me. I just wanted one more thing.
Okay.
Proverbs 30, verse 20 is the one where the whole thing talk about eating as a sex act.
Have you got it in front of you?
Huh?
Probably. Have you got that verse in front of you?
That's bread.
Yes.
Bread eaten in secret is sweet.
Okay.
There's one in Proverbs, and the other one is the woman eateth and wipeth her mouth and says, "I have committed no sin."
Right. Yeah, there's several words.
We cited those last week.
Yeah.
I didn't hear that.
Yeah. Where the word eat has definite sexual connotations, and so it's typically. You know, we're talking about metaphorical language.
Yeah.
You know, and
I'm sorry I brought it up.
No, that's okay. No,
Week I had even gone into length about the Epic of Gilgamesh and how it shows that the phrases to be as gods and to have knowledge had to do with sexual awakening.
Right. And, for example, in modern English, you know, picture two teenage girls having lunch, you know, and the one girl says to the other, "Well, I slept with my boyfriend last night," okay? Now, what does she mean by that? You know, well, so the other girl says, "Did you go all the way?" What does she mean by that? Okay? Neither one of them had mentioned the word sex, had they?
Right.
But what are they talking about?
Sex.
They're talking about sex, exactly. And that's what we're talking about in Genesis 3:15. Because there's euphemistic language, there's other language involved here. I see Gary's been waiting. I don't know for how long. Gary, you have a comment at this point?
Yeah, if you guys are going through this, there's one thing that comes across my mind, and it's like that young prophet that the Savior sent over to Samaria to talk to the king. And the king was going to smack him, and all of a sudden his hand turned into leprosy.
Okay.
And we remember the young prophet was told not to stop or spend the night or anything or eat or drink in Samaria, but come back.
Okay.
But the young prophet, on his way back, there was this old prophet that heard some of the stuff his sons told him. They said, oh, he just went by. So he says, go saddle my donkey. And he went chased after him, and he invited the young prophet to come over to his house and have dinner and what
mm-hmm.
have you.
Right.
So the young prophet ate, and all of a sudden the old prophet, you know, but the old prophet said that the Lord told him to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Spoke to me. Now, as we remember the story there, then the prophet says, this never happened, you know, you're going to die. Now, the issue is here is the young prophet disobeyed the Savior.
That's right.
Now, what did Eve do? The idea here is disobedience or obedience.
Mm-hmm.
She disobeyed. Not that she knew evil, not that she knew any of those things.
Right,
but
right,
she
yeah.
did know,
yeah.
you know, don't put your hand on that hot pan.
Yes. Right.
Okay?
Exactly.
If you do that, you shall die.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you shall be injured.
Yes.
So the whole thing is disobedience. It shows how important it is for us to try and be as obedient
right,
as we can.
Right. And of course,
I learned some of this one time from a long time ago on a conversation with Pastor Yavari. I'm
mm-hmm.
surprised he didn't bring that up.
Right. Well, yeah, the whole issue really is deceivability. Certainly, temptation has a lot to do with the problems we have in the world today, okay, and with sin in general. However, the word temptation is not part of the picture here in any of these chapters of Genesis 1 through 4. It's not about temptation. Temptation is something that happens after you're aware of sin, and you know what sin is, and you indulge anyway, okay? Deception is totally different. Deception is something that somebody tricks you into engaging and doing something that you don't even know is wrong, okay?
It happens all the time.
That's right. And therefore, you cannot blame Eve for what happened to her. That's what I'm saying.
And it's clearly biblical that Eve wasn't to blame. I mean, Paul tells us that Eve wasn't to blame.
Yeah,
Stephen
yeah.
Jones thinks he knows better than Paul. Well, Stephen Jones also thinks that Yahweh created
right.
the evil situation that we've fallen into.
Right.
So.
Yes. And a lot of these anti-seedlenders, especially the women that I've talked to, say, well, your doctrine puts all the onus on Eve, okay? And that's not true. What we're
no,
trying to do
Adam's
is...
Great, more greatly at fault because
that's
he
right.
made the conscious decision to follow.
That's right. And, you know, maybe he was, disenchanted because he saw what happened to Eve, or he felt that because he was married to her, he had no option but to stay married to her and see her through this. Okay.
There are millions of Adams out there today, and there are millions of Eves.
Yes.
It happens all over again all the time.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, and guest 11 says, why would God make evil? He doesn't. that's what we're trying to say. He doesn't. The evil came from the rebellious angels.
Yes, evil comes from our departing from his will.
That's right.
That creates evil.
Right. And so the contention that the anti-seedliners have, namely, that Yahweh is the author of evil, and when he breathed the breath of life into her, part of what he breathed into her was evil. Folks, that's blasphemy. That's absolute blasphemy, what these people are teaching.
They can't substantiate anything they say with Scripture.
No, they can't. They can't. And so, you know, and then they call us evil because we're teaching something. Oh, that's horrible what you people are teaching, that Eve had sex with somebody besides Adam. Well, yes, she did, but it wasn't her fault, okay? She was deceived, not tempted. So we have to have this distinction in our minds that temptation is not the same as deception. Deception happens to totally innocent people.
Would you please, you and Bill, explain disobedience? Because it appears like under disobedience, God gets very upset because he says, don't do this.
Well, okay.
Rebellion. But you're disobedient. So that's...
Oh, yeah. Well, there certainly was disobedience involved, but Eve was not tempted, and she didn't know what she was doing was evil because she had not experienced it yet.
It can be purposeful or it could be out of ignorance, and purposeful disobedience is rebellion.
Yes, purposeful. But... it brings to light an episode in my childhood, my first love, you know, when I was like 8 years old. My next door neighbor girl, her name was Linda, okay? And we were getting along beautifully, and I was imagining, you know, as a child, you know, we're going to be married and blah, 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 blah. And one day, we were just playing in the back room of our house, which had a wood-burning stove, okay? And, you know, your mother told you, don't play with fire. Don't touch a hot stove, okay? So we were chasing each other around this hot stove, and she lost her balance and touched the hot stove, and a big blister appeared on her finger. And then she blamed me for that, okay? She ran out, oh, you're horrible, I'm going home, I'm never going to talk to you again, as if it was my fault, you know? And so, but she should have known not to touch a hot stove. It wasn't my fault. It wasn't her fault either. You know, we forgot ourselves, we were having fun, and she slipped and touched the hot stove. Okay.
Mr. Eli, I think that was your fault. I really do.
Yes, thank you, Gary. I have to do 30 Our Fathers and 50 Hail Marys, and I'm saved. So, Bill, before we move on to Chapter 4, any final thoughts on this episode and maybe comment on Gary's proposition here about disobedience?
It's rebellion.
Oh, yeah, well.
And this rebellion is witchcraft.
Yes.
According
certainly.
To the Bible.
Yes. Yeah. And so it's so God doesn't rebel against himself. Somebody else did the rebelling, and that's the cause of evil. Isn't that correct, Bill?
Right. And that's the, you know, the natural, I'm not saying that the natural result of the beings of Yahweh's creation having free will.
Mm-hmm.
The natural result of that is not rebellion, but it is an option, and it was an option that was exercised.
Yes, yes.
And if we don't have free will, we don't have a capacity to rebel.
Right, and when Yahweh allows evil to occur, if we can put it that way, it's
in his permissive will, and
yes.
It's clear that he has a divine sovereign will and a permissive
yeah.
will.
Right. But you and I and all the children of Yahweh would not be true children if we did not have free will. Okay?
Right.
And free will involves the power, the ability to do evil acts. Otherwise, there is no free will.
Well,
otherwise,
you know,
we'd be machines.
I have six kids, and I watched them all grow up as babies, and I would let them run around the kitchen while I was cooking dinner.
Right.
And when they went near the stove, I would let them near the stove so that they could touch it and get burned.
Yeah, right.
So that they could experience
yes.
the evil that would come of that until they learned not to touch the
That's
stove.
That's right. That's
because
right.
My
because
telling them not to touch the stove.
It fell on deaf ears.
Right. It's just not good enough.
That's right. That's
and,
right.
And when my son's pulling the dog's tail,
right.
and you tell him, don't do that, he doesn't understand why
yeah.
until he gets snapped at.
That's exactly right.
And then he'll realize, oh, I shouldn't pull that tail.
That's
right. The way it is, and that's the way our yeah. race has been from the beginning.
Yeah, yeah. So the important lesson here in Genesis chapter 3 is that we must learn not to be deceived anymore.
And not to touch a stove.
That's right. Not to touch a hot stove.
You lose your girlfriend.
That's right. Exactly.
Well, see, here's the thing that I get, though, is the importance of this is I've heard Pastor Dan plenty of times say the reason that we in this country are in the shape that we're in is because of our disobedience. I've heard that so many times.
Well, that's absolutely true. Just
yes.
read the blessings of obedience and
right.
the curses of disobedience
right.
that are listed in,
yes.
I think they're in Leviticus and in Deuteronomy, and they're a little different in each.
Right.
But these are not, and a lot of times, like, we're on this topic of Genesis 3.
Yes.
The punishments given to Eve, they're not really punishments that Yahweh inflicted.
Mm-hmm.
If you take a good look at those punishments, they are the natural result of the wrongdoing.
That's right.
And when we do wrong in as a nation, those curses of disobedience, those are the natural result.
Right.
that comes from our doing wrong.
Right.
It's,
right.
It's cause and effect. It's not Yahweh sitting up in heaven saying, oh, now I'm going to send some Mexicans across the border, and now I'm going to assist them, and now I'm going to do it. No, it's the natural result of our own disobedience.
Yeah, even though we don't mean to do it most of the time. And that's
right.
that's the problem, you know.
But not being obedient to the law
and the word
causes us
to, and
I mean, look, we have 30 million people in this country go to church every Sunday and rent porn flicks every Monday.
Right.
Oh.
Or invest in the stock market and indulge in usury.
Right. And support the Jews and support Hollywood and the Jewish media.
Right.
For Obama.
That money
and
the Jews are using it to burn us.
Yeah. They think they're doing good, don't they?
Right. They all think they're doing good.
That's the point. They think they're doing good.
So you're saying that in disobedience, this can be done innocently.
Yes.
On disobedience, you know, you see.
These people actually believe they're doing good. They've been deceived thoroughly. What was the quote, Bill? Beguiled totally? How does Paul put it? One of the.
Oh, thoroughly beguiled is the way I translate the word exapetao.
Okay.
Seduced.
Seduced totally.
Yes, it can be seduced.
Totally is what Paul is saying. She was thoroughly seduced, both mentally, physically, spiritually, etc.
I learned one thing. Somewhere, somehow, people have to learn this, that any evil in the world is, I don't care what country, how many people, whatever they do, it is a fact that basically, behind any major sin, there is sex involved.
Okay. Well, you almost always, you know, sex and politics definitely go together. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Because why? Because people are weak sexually. Okay. And you know, who was it? The football player. Some magazine sent some beautiful blonde to his hotel room one night. He was a broadcaster on the NFL show, okay? The Monday Night Football.
O.J. Simpson.
No, it was a white guy. Yeah, but that probably happened to O.J. Simpson, too.
But O.J. Simpson saw her as a waitress.
He used to be a receiver for the New York Giants, became a broadcaster, and some magazine sent a beautiful blonde to his hotel room one deliberately to seduce him and, you know, get him in trouble. He fell for it. And, you know, it ruined his career, you know. And so why would somebody do that deliberately? Why?
Yeah.
You know, that shouldn't happen. That type of thing should never happen. But this is what happened in the garden. Azazel sent Gadriel, according to the book of Enoch, to seduce Eve. This is what Azazel had Gadriel do.
Now you've hit into something that's very interesting here, Pastor, the position of power.
Okay, yes.
You know, and what you're saying is these two got together, did a conspiracy to go to her, deceive her, okay, try to get her to be disobedient so that they could gain power over her.
Exactly.
And at the same time, take that power. Now, it would have been interesting to sit there and speculate, what if Adam would have not played into this?
Right.
These two might have been in a lot of trouble.
Well, it's a very good question, Gary. I have, you know, my only speculation is that Adam having, you know, feeling that Eve was his true love, the woman made for him by Yahweh, once he perceived her in the fallen state, he had sympathy for her, or either that, or he fell into a period of, you know, not maybe spite.
How about remorse and rejection?
Remorse and, you know, and sadness, and what do I do now? You know, so I'm going to indulge out of spite. You know, we don't know what went through Adam's mind, you know.
Oh, rejection.
But Bill brought up a good point, namely, our men who are married to these Eves today, the daughters are marrying outside their race, they're having to face the same situation today.
Well, a lot of men fall into this problem when their significant other
yes.
rejects them.
Yes.
Okay, and so they get into rejection.
Yeah.
They'll do it for a while, and they'll do almost anything
right.
to get her to come back. And,
yeah.
And
Gary, you're a psychologist. Yo, go ahead, Bill.
Most men today are a bunch of effeminate twits.
Right. Yeah, it's because of the
I can't believe the things that I see out in the world today after 12 years of being away.
Yeah,
men
right.
Men that dye their hairs, men that get manicures. You've got to be kidding me.
Look,
dye my
man,
hair,
wrinkle you are.
My hair. That's absolutely wear pajamas to the supermarket.
Yeah, right.
You see that, huh?
Crazy.
Hey, beam me up, Scotty. Get me off this crazy planet.
Right. There's all kinds of crazy. I could never conceive of how soft and effeminate. I'm not saying all men. I mean,
yeah.
Where I live, there's still a lot of good.
There's some real men where you live, you
know,
see.
But it's just crazy. There's a whole ton of effeminate.
Yeah.
I don't have a better word than pussify.
Yeah.
I hate to use it here, but that's
right.
the way it is.
Exactly.
Society is crazy.
Okay.
They're a bunch of fops.
That's right. That's right. Guest 5 says, didn't God say he creates evil? I forget what verse that is. I think, you know, we discussed that to the extent that, well, yeah, he permits evil, and evil has come about as a result of free will.
Well, evil is... If you take the word evil and you turn it around, it's live.
Right.
So actually, what evil is contrary to his word.
Right, exactly.
He says he created it by allowing you to go contrary to his word.
Yeah, and the point I'm making is if Yahweh did not allow us the ability or right to do evil, you know, in fact, there's a verse in the New Testament that says, These evil acts must needs be. That's the exact expression that's used in the New Testament. Why? Because as free will beings, if we don't have the ability to violate the law, then we're not free. We don't really have free will. So the whole point is for us to use our free will to do good instead of evil. Okay?
Well,
but having free will, it allows us to do evil. That's the dilemma.
You know, people love to take verses out of context.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that the verse he's talking about is Isaiah 45:7.
Okay.
And it says, I form the light and create darkness. I make peace and create evil.
Yes.
I, the Lord, do all these things. And he's talking about things that he would do for Jacob Israel.
Right.
And perhaps the context correctly is that he would create evil for those who oppose him.
Surely.
You know what I mean? For
Surely.
Those who oppose him, for those who oppose his people, what he would, and that doesn't mean, he's not saying there that he's the author of bad things.
Yes.
There's a big difference there in what's being said.
Right, right.
And people should read the Bible in context.
Yes.
And not take one phrase out of it and say, oh, look at this. That's just nuts.
Yes, yes.
So wouldn't that be when he says he creates evil? Now you say he's talking to Israel, okay, and he's talking about if you get disobedient with me and don't follow the rules as I set them down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like when he brought all the mixes across this border, is he not creating evil? In other words, he's allowing this to happen
right.
because of our disobedience.
Well, right. It's due to our disobedience that that's the natural result of what's going to happen.
No, that's right. That's
Yahweh
greatest,
being
you know,
Yahweh, I mean, we have the opportunity to do good as a race.
Right.
And God being the fact that he happens to be God, he can't
right.
help but know what route we are going to take. And yes, this is a trial. This has been a trial for 2,000 years. This
right,
is
right.
the fire.
Yeah, and this whole issue of good and evil, deceptibility versus temptability, is absolutely crucial to understanding the Holy Scriptures, you know. And what did Jesus say? He said, be ye therefore wise as serpents, yet guileless as doves. What does that mean?
The reason I brought that on the evil there is the way it's presented there makes you think that God created evil, but
no, yeah.
Bill, as Bill presented it, it sounded like God's is saying, evil will come against you. In other words, he
right.
is to allow evil to come against you, and then instead of using it in that
as compensation,
he used the word he creates.
Yes.
In other words, he's going to create the problem for you for being disobedient.
Exactly.
There
right.
is one more.
You have to read everything in context.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
more, it's compensation.
How about this opinion here? If you don't have evil, in other words, this whole world would be just heaven on earth.
Right.
God couldn't make judgments.
Well,
if you are never been tempted and you have to make a decision
right.
decision between good and evil, then you would have just that's not God's way. He
yes.
has to have a free will for you to take and that you can resist evil and turn
right,
it down
right.
and do only good. Now,
yeah, and many philosophers have stated the only way. It, maybe not the only way, but one of the ways you know what good is by contrasting it with evil. You have to have the experience. You have to know what evil is in order to choose good.
Some people bend out of shape, so why did God just let this happen and do this, that?
Right, but then we'd be machines.
Yeah.
We are Yahweh's sons and daughters. We're not machines that are programmed to do this and programmed to do that. He wants us to make choices.
Exactly.
The right choices.
That's why until the latter days, in the last days, we
yes.
will have Satan tempting and destroying
right.
and doing everything. And he's really doing
right.
good now.
Let me get back to Matthew 10:16, I believe it is. Be ye therefore wise as serpents, yet guileless as doves. What's he telling us to do? We should understand the deceivers. Who are the deceivers? The serpents, the Jews, and all those people who practice deception. B, you must know how they operate. You must know what they're trying to do to you. Once you understand how they are dealing with you, then you've got the antidote, because once the con game has been revealed, the con artist, his game is over.
Yeah. You know what Paul Harvey said one time? He says, if I would be a devil,
yes.
he says, I would leave things just pretty much the way it are right now.
Right, exactly. It wouldn't change a thing because he's in control right now, that's for sure. Yeah.
Because Satan is so strong, he really
right.
can make you a worker.
Yes.
And people just
right.
don't believe that there is Satan, so guess what?
Yeah, and so the crux and the reason why I brought up this whole distinction between deception and temptation is we have to understand how we are being deceived, who the deceivers are, and the absolute turmoil that is being created by deception, leading innocent people who actually think they're doing good to do one mistake after another, thinking they're doing good.
Yeah.
That's the main cause of evil in the world. It's not temptation. It's just those people being wrong who think they're doing good.
No, the temptation is just choosing that
yeah,
you have
right,
free will.
Right. Exactly. Okay, Bill, final thoughts from you before I go into Genesis chapter 4.
No, I think we've established that Eve, I mean, according to Scripture, Eve did nothing wrong. Eve was deceived.
Yes. Okay.
And
we have to understand.
Transgression actually occurred.
Yes.
And Eve was deceived into it.
Yeah, she did transgress. There's no doubt about that.
And it's the serpent that's the villain.
That's
and
right.
And the serpent,
there
if
you
this
go.
Was a thought crime, why did Yahweh
yes.
curse the
yes.
serpent?
She, Eve
why
is not the villain.
Why is the serpent
yes.
punished?
That's the important thing. Eve is not the villain here. The serpent is the villain.
Right, and that's what Paul says.
Yes.
And my question to Stephen Jones would be, why is the serpent punished and why are his offspring mentioned?
Yes, right, yeah. And, of course, our people are punished too because, you know, for example, if you break a law, let's say you break a law of physics, you know, if you jump off a cliff deliberately, what happens? You land on the rocks below.
How lovely.
If
I sincerely believe that Stephen Jones, I mean, Dave Barley, he might be just some unsuspecting patsy because
right.
I don't think he's bright enough to be a deceiver.
But
Stephen Jones, I really think that he's a purposeful pervert.
Yeah, it really sounds like, from the quote that I made earlier, it really sounds like it, yes, you know. But if you jump off a cliff deliberately or you accidentally jump off a cliff not knowing what you're doing, what's the result is the same, isn't it?
Right, but Jones, Emery, Barley, they've all already chumped. It's too late.
Right, exactly.
And Gentry, he's another one.
Yeah. And so if we make a mistake in the real world, we have to pay. That's the point. That's why we have to obey the law. And that's the whole lesson here, is we must obey the law. All the curses of Deuteronomy 28 are falling upon this nation because our people falsely believe that the Old Testament no longer applies. Their pulpit bastards have told them that's the reality. The Old Testament no longer applies.
Well, let me tell you something that works into what you just said. And I give a testimony on my own life. It was just within the last 3 or 4 years, you know, I had something that this person wanted to come after me for some money.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, I'll take this much money. Oh, no, you don't. I know the law. I'm going to do this, and I'm going to take you to court. Okay, I lost 7 times that amount that he asked for in the first place.
Right.
In the court, because the court was crooked.
Right.
Doesn't
judges
our
and lawyers.
Savior say stay out of courts?
Yes.
Yeah, I violated his law, and I paid the price. It doesn't make any difference whether I was right or wrong. The issue is, he said, stay out of there. If you can settle, settle.
Right.
Matter of fact, he said, give me your other coat if you have to. So when you say the laws and how to be obedient to the laws, I mean, what can I say? It cost me just to find out that little thing that I thought I was right on and
right,
I violated, I paid the price.
And that's why we have to know the law. We have to understand, number one, we have to understand our rights, okay? But we have to, as individual Israelites, we have to go, when Jesus said, if you go to the altar to make a sacrifice, if you remember that you have something ought against your brother, then you take care of that first, and then, you know, you settle that situation with your brother, then you come back and make your sacrifice. So it's much more important that we as brothers be reconciled with each other. But in your situation, Gary, you were dealing with Jews.
Yes.
As a Jewish lawyer.
Yes.
You know? So you got to stay away from those people. You absolutely must stay away because they will cheat you, rob you, steal from you, and deceive you every chance they get.
Well, the judge was a Jew also.
Okay. Well, man, you're in big trouble.
I wasn't
off
in big trouble.
Right, and so this whole point, you know, be ye therefore wise as serpents. You have to know how these serpent people operate, and then you can be capable of dealing with them.
Well, we have a whole coven of them in the White House right now.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Yeah.
You see, and I was going to tell you earlier,
uh-huh.
Look out and look and see each one of these people that are cabinet members and those that are supporting them. Where do they go on Saturday?
Yeah, right.
Well, each one of them, you know, I would say 99% of them are Jews.
Yes.
And they want to tell you, oh, no, they're not doing this. You know, I know a good Jew. I know a whole bunch of bad ones.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, apparently some people have lost audio again. Fortunately, it's toward the end of the show. But let me get into Genesis 4:1. Now, Bill, let me ask you a quick question. I know you're familiar with the work of Clifton Emhiser on Genesis 4:1 and how he considers it to be a gloss, namely that whoever translated this and probably the version that's come down to us from the Masoretic text in the original.
Well, I have a quote from Clifton's essays in front of me.
Yeah, well, go ahead. Why don't you read that for us, because it's very germane to leading up to Genesis 4:1.
First, this also reflects my own position on Genesis 4:1.
Okay.
And Clifton and I didn't fall into this. I mean, this took a lot of study and research, especially on Clifton's part. It's his paper, but I mean, this is where we stand on it, and we're in complete agreement on it. Genesis 4:1 says, "And Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bare Cain, and said, 'I have gotten a man from the Lord.'"
Yes.
And if you read the Greek of the Septuagint, it reads much the same way.
Okay.
The verse is missing in the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Really?
Yes, the verse is not attested to in the Dead Sea Scrolls. It's from the last verse of Genesis 3 until Genesis maybe 4. There's a whole chunk missing.
Okay.
And whether or not it was like that when the Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered, I can't tell.
Yeah, it's probably because a lot of the stuff is missing in the Dead Sea Scrolls because of the nature of the scrolls, okay? But let's discuss the gloss.
From Clifton Emmerhiser's paper, The Problem with Genesis 4:1, I'm going to quote his quote of the Interpreter's Bible and the Interpreter's one-volume commentary on the Bible.
Okay.
The Interpreter's Bible, a 12-volume collaborative work of 36 consulting editors plus 124 other contributors, makes the following observation on this verse in Volume 1, page 517. Cain seems originally to have been the ancestor of the Kenite.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, yeah, we totally agree with that.
Yes.
The meaning of the name is metal worker or smith here. That I would like to discuss later on.
Okay.
However, metal worker or what? What was the other word?
Metal worker
metal
or?
Metal worker or smith.
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 A blacksmith, a coppersmith, what, a metal worker is a smith.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
However, it is represented as a derivation of a word meaning acquire
yes.
or get. One of the popular etymologies frequent in Genesis. Hence the mother's words, I have gotten a man. In other words, they're saying it's a play on words.
Yes.
From the Lord, in the KJV, is a rendering following the Septuagint and the Vulgate of F Yahweh, which is literally with Yahweh, and so unintelligible here, it seems probable that F should be Ot, so the mark of Yahweh, and that the words are a gloss.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're claiming that it should be off Yahweh, and it's a gloss.
Okay. Now what does that mean, off Yahweh?
The mark of Yahweh.
Mark
even
of Yahweh.
That's unintelligible.
Oh, okay.
Now the Interpreter's one-volume commentary on the Bible, edited by Charles M. Lehman, makes the following comment on this passage on page 6. Under circumstances which are obscure, verse 1b can scarcely be translated, still less understood.
Okay.
And that's the
okay.
citation from Paul's
right
from I'm sorry from Clifton's paper. Now
yeah.
Clifton goes on to say, therefore, if Genesis 4:1 is unintelligible and can scarcely be translated, still less understood, how can anyone prove anything by quoting it?
Right. Okay.
Additionally, if the words are a gloss, and where
okay.
is the foundation for such a premise?
Right. Okay, now is there a question of words being removed or words added or anything like that in Genesis 4:1?
You know, last week I had cited in relation to the sexual seduction of Eve and our elucidation of that, I cited several apocryphal sources.
Yeah, okay.
And my statement about those sources were that I didn't care really whether or not they're considered canonical.
Yes.
That
right.
the apocryphal sources and the statements about Eve and the serpent and being seduced and virginity and all of that, it definitely reveals that in the ancient Hebrew mind that Genesis 3 was all about sex.
Yes. Okay.
And I'm going to take the same stance on the Aramaic Targums.
Okay, yes.
Which, I'm going to read from several Aramaic Targums, and
yes.
which one of them is right or more accurate,
okay.
I don't care.
Right. Okay, before
These are
you
documents
get...
that are over 2,000 years old,
uh-huh.
and it shows what the people of the time thought about Genesis chapters 3.
Right, and I want to stress that the Targums are Judahite literature. They're not Jewish literature, as most people falsely believe.
Well,
right. Judahite
I
literature.
Mean, the Jews preserved the Targums in the Talmud.
Right.
And Jews, and even Clifton Emmerhiser even quotes a particular Jewish rabbi. However, the Targums themselves are very ancient, and the idea of a
Predate
Targum dates all the way back to the time of Nehemiah.
Right, exactly. It's Israelite, Judahite literature, which the Jews have preserved in their Talmud, and I believe it's preserved in other places as well. Before you read, I just wanted to say, there's a couple more callers. I'm going to keep them on hold until you finish, your discussion right here. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, well, quoting directly from Clifton's paper again. At this point, I will quote a few passages which most of the anti-seedliners claim are Jewish
okay.
sources.
Yes.
And according to them, should be discredited, along with and including the Talmud, inasmuch as the Torah and the Old Testament are the first volumes of the Talmud, then by their perverted line of reasoning, we would have to discard the entire Old Testament from our Bible.
That's right.
Absurd.
Yes.
First, in the Aramaic Targum, Aramaic was merely one of the languages which the Messiah and his disciples knew. the Aramaic targum called Pseudo-Jonathan on Genesis 3:6, which is unique in as much as it identifies the angel Samael as the serpent.
Okay.
And the woman saw Samael, the angel of death, and she was afraid and knew that a tree was good for food, and that it was a remedy for the enlightenment of the eyes, and that the tree was to be desired to make one wise. She took of its fruit and ate, and also gave it to her husband, and he ate.
Mm-hmm.
Again, they will also condemn the Aramaic targum Pseudo-Jonathan, they meaning the one seed liners,
right,
on Genesis 4:1, which says, "And Adam knew that Eve, his wife, had conceived from the Samael, the angel of death,
mm-hmm,
and she became pregnant and bore Cain."
Right.
Now, I'm going to skip ahead, and I'm going to quote the Palestinian targum to Genesis 4:1.
Okay.
"And Adam knew his wife, who had desired the angel, and she conceived and bare Cain, and she said, I have acquired a man, the angel of the Lord."
Mm-hmm.
Now, Clifton quotes a rabbinical work here, and I don't know the antiquity of this particular work, but the rabbi says, "And she saw that his likeness was not of earthly beings, but of heavenly beings, and she prophesied and said, I have gotten a man from the Lord."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, these targums, and there's three of them, and they clearly demonstrate that people from that era believed that there was more to Genesis 4:1
yes,
than we know.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, I'm going to make a conjecture and say that we've seen in Chronicles chapter 155, was it? The end of chapter 1 or the very end of chapter 2? It's the very end of one of those verses, and I never remember it.
Okay.
In 1 Chronicles, that the Kenites were the scribes in Judea.
Right.
And they are the descendants of Cain.
That's right.
And that's clear in Scripture, and it's clear in...
Right.
I don't know any commentator and any...
Yeah.
Don, any commentator of stature before this
right,
debate came into our
right
knowledge.
And it's like having a Jewish lawyer today.
Right, exactly.
Right.
Well that's the thing.
Judge.
Yes, exactly.
That's the thing with the Kenites being Smiths.
Yes.
And the Kenites were known Smiths in the ancient world, and Clifton has shown that there were actually depictions of Kenites in Egypt that were pictured with the bellows, and their trade was to be smiths.
Yeah, and hooked noses.
Right. Now, the smiths of the ancient world, they were the men that had ovens.
Yes.
And a natural extension of their vocation would have been to create these clay tablets.
Yes.
That were used for writing and to make contracts.
Right.
And
right,
it was a natural extension of the vocation of smith to become a scribe.
Right.
And the smiths of the ancient world became the scribes.
Yes.
If you and I wanted to make a contract, we would get a piece of clay,
right,
wet clay, two pieces actually. We would inscribe what we wanted inscribed on it, and the smiths would do this.
Uh-huh.
And we would roll our seal across each other's piece of clay with our contract wording on it, and the smith would bake them in his oven. And that's the creation of a contract. And I would have the one with your seal impression on it. You would have the copy with my seal impression on it. That was our contract.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a natural thing for smiths to do. And the Kenites went from being smiths in Genesis chapter 4 to being scribes in 1 Chronicles.
Yes, yes.
And
these are the same scribes that accompanied the Pharisees, whom Jesus roundly condemned over and over and over again.
Well, right. Not only John chapter 8, which is the most quoted,
yeah,
but Luke chapter 11,
mm-hmm,
and several other passages in Scripture.
Matthew 23.
They connect.
Yes.
They connect. Yahshua Christ in Luke chapter 11 connects the generations, the race of the scribes and Pharisees in Judea,
yes,
with Cain.
Okay.
Okay. And says that he,
yes,
was
he
a
does,
murderer from the beginning.
Okay.
And in that passage in the King James Version, the word genos is translated generation, and it shouldn't be because it's talking about sons and fathers, both near and
right,
remote, and the only proper way to translate that word in that passage is race.
Yes.
And
generation of people, generations of people across eons of time, not a group of people living around the same time.
And when we go back into the Old Testament and see who was killing the prophets and who was killing the priests of Yahweh, we find Jezebel the Canaanite and Doug the Edomite.
Yes, and
the
Balak,
the Pharisees are the same
Balak
race.
The Edomite, exactly. Yes, yes. Always and Amalek destroying our people, the Canaanites destroying our people, etc. Yes.
The race of Cain can be can be traced from Cain to the Kenites, to the Canaanites, to the Edomites, and it can be traced all through the Old Testament. Genesis chapter 15, Genesis chapter 36, 1 Chronicles, and many places in between.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and recognize Northeast California. Are you with us? Do you have a question? And
how about if I take his time?
Oh, okay.
I want to jump over to 1 John 3:12.
Okay.
Not as Cain, who was of the wicked one, and slew his brother. Now, let me tell you something. Adam was never the wicked one.
Well, of course not.
So it's obvious that Cain was the wicked, Satan was the wicked one, who the result is Cain.
Right.
And I have that verse coming up in my notes, and that language that's used, ek tu poneru, that the way that the preposition is used with the genitive case definitely in Greek denotes descent.
Yes.
And a lot of the non-seedliners, they claim that Cain had only learned from the serpent, or Cain learned from there is nowhere recorded in Genesis 3 and 4 that Cain was a pupil of the wicked one.
Right.
He was the son of the wicked
one. That's right. And it's not recorded as the son of Adam either.
Right. And there's a severe mistranslation in the King James and most mainstream translations, again, in 1 John 3, 3:12.
Okay.
And my translation says, not as Cain, who was from of the wicked one and slaughtered his brother.
Yes.
And with delight he slaughtered him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not translated like that in any translation I've seen.
Okay.
Because his deeds were evil.
Yes.
In other words, Cain gloried and was happy to slaughter Abel.
Yeah, and just as the Jews are happy to slaughter white people, true Israelites today.
All the time.
Yes, absolutely. The communists, the Zionists, just love to watch us die and put us in situations where we shall die. I'm going to recognize North Central Texas. If my computer responds here, let me click on it again. Okay, it says dialed in, but for some reason it's not responding. Okay.
Maybe you have audio problems.
Well, some people are saying in the chat room that there are problems, so maybe the show is being attacked again after being virtually 90 minutes, which is where we're going to go. I'm going to try one more time to recognize North Central Texas. If it doesn't work, thanks for joining us. In any case, we're going to – let me just quickly –
how much time we have?
Well, we usually go 90 minutes, okay?
Oh.
And we started – we're just about 90 minutes ago. I just want to bring up one more point about Genesis 4, and we can discuss this in more detail next time when we'll discuss Genesis chapter 4. And I'm going to read the King James Version 4:1, Genesis 4:1. And Adam knew his wife Eve, and she conceived and bare Cain, and said, I have gotten a man from Yahweh. Now, this word man, I want to point out to everybody, is not translated from the word Adam. It's translated from the word Ish, which can be a male of any race or a person of any race. It is not saying, when Eve is being quoted here, I have gotten a person from Yahweh, she is not calling this person, this offspring of hers, an Adamite.
That's correct.
This must be recognized as a fact, folks. She is not saying that Cain is an Adamite. Quite the contrary. She is simply saying, what is this person that I have given birth to? That's what she's saying.
That's a bingo.
Right. So when Ted Weiland says that Genesis 4:1 proves that Cain was the son of Adam, he's wrong, because she is not saying he's an Adamite.
Bingo.
Bingo. Okay, let's continue.
There's a lot I would like to say yet about Genesis 4:1 that we'll have to save for next week.
Let's save it for next week because that, ladies and gentlemen, is a very important realization about Genesis 4:1. She is not saying that Cain is an Adamite. Very important. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. Thanks for listening. It gets better from here. Okay. Next week on Christogenos, Bill Fink and whoever cares to join us again, we will be talking about Genesis chapter 4 and the true lineage of the Canaanites, who are the descendants of Cain, not of Adam. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening. Yahweh bless.
Yahweh bless.
Yahweh bless you all.